Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. Our next guest spent a lot of time in Juneau when she was Commissioner of Health and Social Services in the Bill Walker administration. And for a few weeks at the tail end of his administration, she served as Alaska's Lieutenant Governor. She was asked to step in after Byron Mallott's sudden resignation, and now she's been asked to step in as interim president of the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium after Andy Tuber's resignation and recent death. So, Valerie, welcome to Juneau Afternoon. Let's start off with something light and fun. I know that when you were Commissioner, Valerie, you were known as the Cussbook Commissioner because you always wore a handmade cussbook. So what are you wearing today?
So I also want to first acknowledge that I'm speaking from Anchorage today, and these are the traditional homelands of the Dena Ina people, and I just want to acknowledge their incredible stewardship of this land, where we have the great pleasure to live, learn, work, and play. So the cussbook I'm wearing today is a navy blue cussbook that has some concentric circles, and there's a little bit of a Venn diagram thing going on. My cussbooks are made for me by my sister, Christy McEwen, and she is an elementary music teacher at Pearl Creek Elementary in Fairbanks.
Thank you for that land acknowledgement. I think it's good to hear land acknowledgements from everywhere. Valerie, do you get comfort from wearing your sister's cussbooks? Do they give you strength?
They do. And even before she started making them, I wore them because it reminds me of my grandmother. And my grandmother is the smartest person I've ever met. She passed away a number of years ago, I think in 2004. And she taught me one of my most valuable lessons in life, which is, if you lead with love, you'll never stand alone. And that's really about treating people with respect, about listening to people more than you speak. And just being good relatives to each other. And so, yeah, and the fact that my sister learned how to sew from my grandmother. And so it makes it even more special.
Yeah, it does. It explains a lot about you and why people reach out to you in troubled times. And I don't know whether to congratulate you on stepping in as the interim in this position, because it's a very important position. The Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium is one of the biggest health care providers in the state, important to Alaska Natives everywhere, but also just the circumstances are very difficult. Maybe you could speak to that about how you're going to navigate.
Sure. So I think one of the things that I really appreciate is that Alaska Native women have earned and deserve our respect. And that's an important thing to remember. And I come from a really strong line of strong Alaska Native women who step up to serve when our communities ask that of us. But I also want to make sure that you understand that this isn't about me. This is really about the people that we serve, the incredible team members who really work hard every day to carry out our mission, and also really about building upon the work that we've done to date, especially now during this pandemic, and really what we can do to take that to the next level.
So I guess there's always healing that needs to be done when you have unresolved questions. What will happen to the investigation that was underway after Andy Tuber resigned?
Well, I first want to say that I knew and worked with Andy I knew him for many years, and my heart goes out to his family. With regard to his resignation, I really can't say very much. There's currently an investigation underway, and I don't want to say or do anything that jeopardizes the integrity of that investigation.
I guess that's understandable. I guess There must be a lot of organizational healing, though. You can't have something like this happen and not have people that need some space and help with that. How are you going to deal with that?
Well, I think, you know, the board has asked, has recognized the challenging situation we're in. They've taken it seriously and have launched their own independent investigation. But as we talk about every day here, that, you know, we provide really incredibly valuable services to Alaskans. And the people that we serve are counting on us to continue that good service on their behalf. And, you know, this isn't the first time that that Alaska has faced challenges, and we rise to that challenge, whatever it is before us. And, you know, one of the things that has helped me is, and we certainly have seen that true during this time of global pandemic, I learned a really valuable lesson from the Dental Health Aid Therapy Program, which is when we were under very, very challenging circumstances. And what I learned was that people really will do the most amazing things under the most impossible of conditions. And children and families and communities are always the right reasons.
I guess we just need to have faith, right? That people, if presented the options, will do the right thing. Now, you recently took a job as president of the Alaska Pacific University, and that's in the process of becoming a tribal college. And I know that you probably had many projects underway there, but you're taking a leave of absence from that school?
Yes. So, as president of Alaska Pacific University, I asked for and was granted a leave of absence to be able to serve as interim president of ANTHC. And Alaska Pacific University is a Alaska Native serving institution, and we're a tribally controlled college. And APU is also in the process of pursuing the federal designation of a tribal university. And so the good news is that Dr. Hilton Halleck, who has been the provost, has agreed to step up and is now the acting president of APU, and she's incredible, and we're in very capable hands there.
So what were you working on before you had to step in at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium?
Well, one of them was just the basic premise of doing things a little bit differently when I was a college student, both in undergrad as well as graduate school, that I was often told that the expectation was that I had to give up the most beautiful parts of who I am as a Yupik person, the very essence of who I am as an Alaska Native person to be successful in higher education. And I think if we're asking students to do that, then we're doing it wrong. And when students and our faculty and staff are able to bring their whole selves to this work, we have much better outcomes. And it's not just the Native students who benefit, it's everyone who benefits. And we certainly have seen time and time again that when an Alaska Native perspective, when a tribal perspective is represented at the table, when decisions are being made, we have much better outcomes.
Well, one of the things that I'm curious about is that there were a lot of synergies between APU and the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, that I guess the APU programs were supposed to help build healthcare careers at ANTHC. How is that coming?
Well, you know, one of the things about APU is we're a small university. We have about 500 students, and when you have a program that's really an incredible, that offers incredible degrees, we have like 30 different degree programs in a variety of different focus areas. The nice thing about being in a small university is it's really hard to get lost as a student. And we've heard from our students that that while they're interested in a variety of careers, they're interested in health careers. but they also want to be in a place where it doesn't feel like a big giant city. And APU offers that. It's a place where you get to know your colleagues, your fellow students, and your professors. And we have a 7-to-1 student to faculty ratio, where if you need a letter of recommendation, that professor knows you by name and by face. It might be a Blackboard Collaborate face, which is the higher education's version of Zoom. But still, it's a really great opportunity to really make a difference in our state.
So coming to NTHC as the interim president, do you think that there's going to be some flow back and forth between the two organizations that you can help, since you'll have both perspectives?
Oh, sure.
So the other thing that we wanted to ask you about is when you worked for Governor Bill Walker as his Health and Social Services Commissioner, you were pretty much absorbed in healthcare because Medicaid reform was, it seemed like it was all consuming. It was just huge. How has that experience helped prepare you for your new assignment?
Well, one of the things that I think has been helpful is during our administration's term, not only did we do Medicaid expansion, which extends coverage right now. At the time, I think we were at about 49,000 Alaskans, and now I think it's around over 60,000 Alaskans who have health coverage that simply didn't have it before. And that's a wonderful thing to have at any time, but especially during a global pandemic. And one of the things that Medicaid expansion did is it increased opportunities for Alaskans to have a relationship with a primary care provider. And let me tell you what a difference that makes when you're trying to navigate a COVID world during a pandemic for testing and vaccines and all kinds of things and healthcare. The other is that while we were there, we also implemented Medicaid reform and other kinds of healthcare reform, as you mentioned. But we also implemented the Alaska Tribal Child Welfare Compact. And I think what we saw firsthand is we provide a much broader array of services when we have meaningful partnerships. And so we worked with legislators and their staff. And we certainly have learned over and over again that, you know, change isn't easy, it's hard. But sometimes the most meaningful change comes from collaborating with people who have a different perspective and a different view. And so what that's shown me time and time again is that we're stronger when we work together to do the hard work that we need to get accomplished in Alaska.
Well, the tribal healthcare system has gotten a lot of attention for its success rate in vaccinating Alaskans. In fact, it's been getting credit for helping the state have one of the best rates of vaccinations. So is this success, in your mind, sort of a milestone for the Native healthcare system, sort of validation?
Oh, absolutely. And I think we've seen, you know, during this pandemic where Alaska is leading the way in vaccinations, we're seeing firsthand how a robust tribal health system helps all Alaskans. And it, you know, it's not just ANTHC, it's YKHC, it's Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation, it's SEARCH, it's every single tribal health organization and every tribe who operates health programs. And what excites me is that if we can work together like this during a pandemic with our partners outside of the tribal health system, then we can really expand those opportunities in a post-COVID world. And the thing that makes me the most proud of the tribal health system is that we're not just vaccinating Alaska Native and American Indian people, we're vaccinating all Alaskans. And that's part of the wonderful thing about Alaska, right? Is we do things to, we look out for each other during hard times and challenging times. And by taking proactive measures, we ensure that our communities are as healthy as possible.
Well, Juno just got a dose of vaccines, extra doses from Surge, and just recently. So some additional people in Juno are being vaccinated because of their local native tribal healthcare organization. So this is such an interesting phenomenon. I don't think that we've had something like this happen where the native health organization has come to the rescue of the population as a whole. Seems like it's a new path.
Well, I think we've seen other opportunities. If you go back in our history, I think that I think it hasn't been as obvious. There's a lot of work that happens behind the scenes, whether it's Healthy Alaskans 2010, Healthy Alaska, or Healthy Alaskans 2020, Healthy Alaskans 2030. Our epidemiology programs working together, our public health programs working together to ensure that we're moving forward in a good way. I think those things have been happening for years, but it's just become a lot more obvious during the pandemic. And the great news is that it's more visual, it's more immediate, and it's also a really great springboard for us to be able to continue this good work together.
You know, over the years, I've been to a lot of hearings pre-COVID when elders would talk about healthcare. And of course, they would always mention their memories of the pandemic, of what they had been told. And it seemed that it guided a lot of the decisions that were made. There was almost sort of this feeling of never again are we going to be left vulnerable. Do you think that the pandemics of 1918 and 1919 have helped to inform the native healthcare response to COVID?
Absolutely. And, you know, in my family, like so many other Alaska Native families, you know, those stories of pandemic weren't historical stories. Those are stories that are told in our families today. And, you know, for example, in my mom's family, her parents had 9 children and only 4 of them lived to adulthood. And so four of them died in infancy and as they were toddlers from things that are entirely preventable today. And so for us, that's a very, very real thing. And the other is that, you know, and when our family had the opportunity to be vaccinated, the folks that we were most worried about in our household were my mother, who's 77, and she lives with us. And to be fair, I'm not sure if she lives with me or if I live with her, because she is my mom after all, and she's a good, strong Yupik woman. And you know what that's like. So we were worried about her because she's an elder. And we were also most worried about my youngest daughter, who's 17 and has asthma. And she had RSV as a baby when she was 8 months old, and we were still living in Bethel. And so
RSV is sort of a respiratory syndrome, right? And it can kill babies in some cases.
Yes. Yes. And so, as you know, from living in the Bethel area, infants in communities without running water, without adequate sanitation facilities, are 11 times more likely to be hospitalized for respiratory infections and 5 times more likely to be hospitalized for skin infections. And you know, sometimes it's easy to get lost in those numbers. But the reality is, in a village without adequate sanitation, without running water, 1 out of every 3 babies needs to be medevaced and spend time in a hospital to be able to make it through simply because they don't have running water. And that happens today. And so my daughter, when she was 8 months old after having RSV and was in the hospital for 9 or 10 days, has a compromised respiratory system. And by the time she was 7, she'd been hospitalized 9 times. The first for RSV and the rest for pneumonia. And so, you know, catching COVID and surviving was a very real worry for us, and was terrorizing for her because she remembers from early childhood not being able to breathe. And so So for us, you know, when she was vaccinated, I mean, our whole family cried because we knew she was going to make it. And so I want to encourage any Alaskans who have not yet been vaccinated. And Alaska is so fortunate that if you're 16 or older, the vaccine is available to you. And there are three different options, and choose the one that works for you. And these are simple things that we can do to protect your friends and your family, your neighbors, and people that we don't even know. And that's the great thing about Alaska, is we stand up for each other.
You know, we have seen a lot of stories from the lower 48 of people having trouble getting the vaccine, particularly in rural areas. And when you think about how the vaccine has to travel to rural communities in Alaska on airplanes, and who knows, maybe even on dog teams, at least historically, that has happened before. I mean, we have tremendous challenges, but seem to be doing amazingly well. Do you think that there are some lessons that people nationally might look at the Native healthcare system to learn from?
Oh, absolutely. So one of the things that tribal health organizations do really well is the notion of when we provide care as close to home as possible, in the language and the cultural context of the people that we serve, we have much better outcomes. And I think about, you know, my friends at YKHC, at the Yukon Kuskokwim Health Corporation, in the Bethel area, and that's where I started in healthcare. And they do amazing things on a daily basis, heroic things every single day to make sure that people who live in the smallest communities, where our villages are average sizes between 300 to 350 people, they're doing amazing things to make sure that people are protected. And, and whether it's YKHC or whether it's SEARCH in Southeast Alaska, we're in small communities and we know the names and the faces of the people that we serve. And it's those kinds of community connections and those relationships that we build with leaders in the community. And it's not necessarily, you know, leaders in a community, in a rural community, in a Native community are different. It's not necessarily the person who's hired or who's paid or who's anointed. It's the person, it's the community doer. It's the auntie or the uncle or the maoluk, the grandma or the appa, the grandpa, who when at a community meeting, no matter how large or how small, when that person speaks, everyone listens because what they say matters.
And I guess you need those people in a pandemic. You need them on your side. Just in wrapping things up, I did want to talk about one thing I don't know that people generally are aware of, that you worked for the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium as an attorney years ago, and you helped fight for the dental health aid therapy program, which basically sent a group of Native Alaskans to New Zealand to learn how to be dental therapists. And this, it was a new profession. We didn't have it in America. They were allowed to be able to drill teeth, even pull teeth, under consultation with a dentist. But the way that Alaskans did it is they utilized telemedicine. Dentists were always consulted. But initially, the American Dental Association fought this program. They even sued to block the dental health aid therapists that were sent to New Zealand that spent 2 years learning how to become therapists. They blocked them from practice, and you wage that battle in Congress. But yet, I'm kind of curious, I haven't followed the dental health aid therapy program in recent years. This was decades ago. How is it doing now?
Well, that program it's what a different place we are today than where we were in those early stages. The program is still providing incredible training to ensure that mid-level oral health care providers can provide valuable services in rural communities. And the program was actually recently accredited by the Commission on Dental Accreditation, which is basically an arm of the American Dental Association. And it's the first time a mid-level dental program has been accredited by the ADA. And so that's an exciting thing to see. And, you know, it's, you know, we always say that Alaska's different and Alaska's unique. But one of the things that we know is that Alaska Native people really want what every other Alaskan wants. We want our children to be healthy and happy, well-educated, and to live in safe communities. But because of where we live, we have to do things differently in order to achieve that same outcome. And so we so appreciate working with our congressional delegation, working with our legislature, and working with our governor, and our private foundations who support our work, who recognize that we need that flexibility in order for our people to be able to thrive. And when that happens, all of Alaska thrives and all of Alaska benefits, as we've seen during the pandemic.
But this, again, was an out-of-the-box idea, as was the health aid, the rural health aid, decades ago when it started. It was not something that had been done. So it's interesting that we try these things. And do you see room for more innovation ahead?
Oh, absolutely. I think about, you know, if you're looking for specific examples, one of the things that was most exciting was to see the Alaska Tribal Child Welfare Compact that was negotiated between the state and tribes. And basically it was modeled after the very successful Alaska Tribal Health Compact, and really sets the framework for tribes and tribal organizations who are interested in taking over any or all of the child welfare services that are currently being provided by the state. And we think that kind of transformational change will really help us to do a lot of the prevention work that we know is necessary in our communities and in our state.
Well, Valerie, before I let you go, I have to remind you that the last conversation that I had with you was when you were Lieutenant Governor, and you had at that time expressed interest in running for governor someday. And so I'm just curious, is that something that you still think you might do someday? Or do you have just so many other things going on that that's maybe off to the back burner forever?
Well, you know, right now I'm just really focused on the work at hand right now, which is to really support the ANTHC team and the board on the mission to deliver world-class healthcare to Alaska Native people and to communities in our state and to all of Alaska. And that's a pretty big job. So I'm really focused on that right now.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for being with us. I understand that this is technically your very first day on the job.
It is. It is definitely, it is my first day on the job. And I have to say, I am so incredibly humbled and honored that the board has asked me to serve as interim president.
All right. Well, we wish you the best. A lot of important things will be riding on your shoulders. So best of luck to you, Valerie.
Oyana, Bilra to you and Birchti for everyone who's listening.
Goyana Chuknuk and Gunakshish, Valerie Davidson.